Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Welcome to episode 24, Death of Osmodian. No matter how much time we dedicate to this topic, it's never going to be enough. Moving on, Ben this week, he will not be joining us. Apparently Trollocs destroyed the bridge that he usually uses to get home, but no worries, he has some connections, he'll be with us next time. To help me trudge through the muck that Mr. Robert Jordan has gotten us into, is Carrie.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening to us again this week. I know there's a lot of people that have anxiously been asking our opinions on this matter, so we'll get started right after we do some awesome Wheel of Time news. Andrew.
Hello, listeners. I'm Andrew, alongside Carrie and Jason, and this is What You Should Know. We received a report from Shida Wise Ones that there are several relics of their Karakarn Kuladin being sold in various holds throughout the Waste. According to Belinda, a Wise One at Comarta Hold, Wise Ones have already confiscated at least 6 forearms supposedly belonging to their martyred Chief of Chiefs. Members of any sept are urged to immediately take Gaishane, anyone suspected of peddling false Kuladin artifacts.
You know, you just can't find any good artifacts these days, can you?
No.
Definitely. Relics are 1 in 17 million, apparently.
Yeah.
In other news, the December issue of Forbes has published an article about Robert Jordan entitled My Author, My Life. In the article, which you can read at, and this is a long one, www.forbes.com/2006/11/30/Robert-Jordan-illness. Excuse me, that would be Robert-Jordan-illness-tech-media_CX_HC_books06_1201jordan.html. They discuss a bit of Wheel of Time history and the tentative schedule for the release of the 12th book, A Memory of Light. More importantly, it also discusses Mr. Jordan's illness. The fans of the series, including those who offered so much to their favorite author, including offers to give bone marrow, and the special relationship that we as fans have developed with him. It discusses the proverbial elephant in the room, of course, that most fans don't talk about out of politeness. That elephant, of course, is the fear many of us have if the worst should happen to take place. The article is also significant because it is the first time that Robert Jordan has publicly talked about what would happen in that particular situation. If everyone will pardon me, I'll read an excerpt from the article. Jordan plans to live another 30 years, long enough, he says, to finish all the books that are in his head right now. That will require a large dose of luck, and so far, his luck has been mixed. The new drug he's taking seems to be working well. He can still write for 2 hours a day at most, compared to the 8 or 9 hours in healthier times. At this rate, he'll submit the final book in 2008 for publication in 2009, says Tom Doherty, president of Tor Books, Jordan's publisher. If he gets better, he'll write faster. No one wants to talk about the alternative. If he dies, could someone else finish the series? Authors like V.C. Andrews and Mario Puzo have posthumously passed along their series to other writers. Still, some fans worry that another author, even Harriet, wouldn't be true to Jordan's voice. Jordan, however, is open to the idea. I'm getting out notes, so if the worst actually happens, someone could finish A Memory of Light and have it end the way I want it to end, he says. But I hope to be around to actually finish it myself. The decision, Jordan says, will be left to Harriet and Doherty, who has been a close friend and colleague for years. But Doherty isn't ready to address that possibility. I'm not prepared to concede that that's going to happen, Doherty says. I'm working on the belief that he's going to beat this thing. Who else can tell this story? So what do you guys think?
it's definitely big news. It's something that obviously, I would hate to say that every fan has probably thought of this, like, what's going to happen? I would say Harriet, being his wife and editor of the books, would be the first choice, but we don't know if she's a writer or if what her writing ability is. Although she would know what he would want, you know, for finishing the series. So maybe it could be her and, like, a co-writers or something putting it together. I just hope that it never has to come to that. I'm sure that if anybody can get through this disease and pull through and kick its butt, that Robert Jordan can do it. So hopefully we'll never have to think about this.
Well, I agree. It's, you know, it's tough. It's a tough situation when, you know, he's going through so much physical sickness, and yet he's also has the weight of, it's probably seemingly the world on his shoulders, and trying to get the series of books finished. I personally hope that he concentrates, number one, on the sickness first and the books second. And I don't really think too much to discuss about what would happen if the worst should happen until that does happen. But I think significantly, this is the first time that he said that he's been open to having someone else mm-hmm. finish the series instead of himself. I think in the past he said that if he goes, the story goes with him. But I think he reversed his feeling on the matter, much to the delight of everyone listening, hopefully.
Yeah, I having read through the article and that, I kind of disagreed a little bit with the article on the idea that I think Harriet and Tom together, I mean, knowing Jordan as well as they both do, could probably really put together, you know, something that would at least be close enough to Jordan's voice if the worst should happen. But once again, I'm with everybody else. I really think he's going to pull through on this one, and I don't think it's going to be an issue, ultimately.
Welcome to Jason's Wheel of Time Journal. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Jason's Wheel of Time Journal. I'm not going to do the regular Wheel of Time Journal. Instead, there's a couple topics that I want to go over. First off, if you haven't listened to our previous podcasts, where we, in each of them, we apologize for our pronunciations. Many of the things that we say are wrong as far as pronunciations go. Egwene is not Egwene. We don't deny it. We do our best. There are 1,800 different places, people, things, events. That's a huge number. And the only person that I'm sure gets every single one of them right is Robert Jordan himself. Well, maybe Harriet. But anyway, the point is, we're not perfect. We're fans of the books. I've never listened to the books on audio tape. I don't know if Carrie or Ben or Andrew have, but I've never. So when we get something stuck in your head, unfortunately, it's there. It's tough to get it kicked out. So we do care that we get it right. It's not that we don't care at all. If something that we say really, really bugs you, just please let us know. Give us an email at podcast@dragonmount.com. Set us straight. Also, we'll be making our show notes available to everyone. Most likely what we're going to do is put a link in our main podcast page at dragonmount.com. More on that. I'll talk about that a little bit more in depth later. The Wheel of Time Journal, as I said, it's not going to be about the Great Hunt this week, which normally it would be. I want to talk a little bit about why we decided to do The Death of Osmodian. If you don't know, if you're just a casual reader of The Wheel of Time, The Death of Osmodian is one of, if not the, big mystery in The Wheel of Time. Robert Jordan has never said, and probably never plans to let us in on the secret that we're going to try our best to give everyone the skinny on the whole affair. This is also the point where we're going to have spoilers.
Welcome to Carrie's Fan Feedback of the Week. Okay, everybody, for the fan feedback this week, the first one that we're going to do is actually something that was posted at the Dragon Mount, our podcast page. It was in the comments section after episode 23. And I would like to thank Goodlight for this. He says, or... I'm sorry, actually, I don't know if it's a he or she because of the name. So they say, I think when you all talked about Asmodean and his crimes, I think the poetry of his actions wasn't really touched on. Asmodean, at least according to the White Book, didn't just maim people he didn't like. He was much more focused. It's important to note that he didn't just kill an artist who he didn't like on a personal basis. He rendered unable those artists who created art he didn't like. Painters might be blinded, musicians might have hands cut off. What was important was that those artists could no longer create the art which offended him. I think it's an important distinction. It really highlights how he views himself in contrast to, say, de Mondret, who destroyed based on slights to his honor. Asmodian was an artist, perhaps a jealous artist, or one who simply viewed himself as underappreciated, whether due to lacking in the abilities of others to recognize his own talents, or giving too much credit to art, which he, with his superior appreciation, judged as unworthy. Asmodian knew he never reached his own potential as an artist, and I think his desire to have an eternity to reach his own potential is in great contrast to the other chosen. Asmodian had a much more ethereal, even idealistic reason for turning to the shadow, and I think that's why really sets him apart and makes it possible for him to fill the role Lamphere set him for a tutor.
I really am. I'm kind of mad at myself for forgetting this aspect of Asmodian. When you read the book so many times, and then you go back, you think, you know, I was under the impression that he just killed people at random. But he didn't just kill people; he maimed them. If he didn't like their art, if they painted, you know, he'd cut off their hands. But it just furthers my opinion of him. This is what I meant about him being so real. That's a real thing that I think a lot of people would do if they had the ability. You know, if you've ever been cut off in traffic, who's to say that someone, they didn't like you, they would cut off your hands if you weren't painting good enough to their standards. But he made it so they couldn't create art again. I think, again, like I said, it's twisted, it's evil. But again, if given the power, how many people in this world wouldn't be tempted to do just that?
Yeah, I understand. And I was also actually going to talk about this in the last podcast, and as well as the fact that Lanfear did kind of single him out as a tutor. And, you know, something came up during recording and it spaced my mind. And then I didn't realize until I actually listened to the episode afterwards that we had completely skipped the most crucial part about, you know, his atrocities in the Age of Legends, is that they were really all personally motivated for him. So, you know, I once again, yeah, it's I really have to thank Goodlight for pointing this stuff out, because, you know, I feel kind of like a dope myself for forgetting to actually do it during the recording.
Yeah, he's not that. He didn't do these. He didn't do the evil that he did for the benefit of anyone except for the benefit of himself. He's greedy, selfish in that way. But at the same time, he's not creating evil for the whole world, which I think most of the Forsaken want.
I also have an email that I would like to read. It's kind of long, so I apologize if it sounds like I'm just kind of rambling on, but for reading somebody else's. But it is from Sergei Kit in the Ukraine. And he says he's been living there for 7 years and he hasn't read the last two books. So anything that he comes up with is just from the others and on. I kind of cut off a bit of the beginning because it's a really long email. The part where he gets into his theory is, I believe that Moradin was back from the dead about the same time that Ran went to the waste. The bubbles of evil started a little before that, with the Dark One's power increasing, and that's got to be when he, the Dark One, could start resurrecting Forsaken, and I don't see a point for waiting till the sixth book. Now, we see a lot of strategy in what Moradin / Ishmael does. So I think the first thing he planned out is to tie a string to Rand. That string is Taim. I believe Taim is Moradin's servant, pupil, new dreadlord in training, in quote, in brackets, or something along those lines. So, Taim is sent to Rand, but there is Asmodian, who very well may know Taim and others like him. Remember what Taim says to Rand. that he has been able to find new male channelers, and he knows how to test a male if he can be taught or not. Why would he need such knowledge or trying to find such men if not for the Dark One's ends? Another of Morden's channelers travels to Camelin for the assassination of Asmodian. Could be one of Taim's Black Tower favorites. Asmodian was frightened. Would a dark friend channeler popping up in front of you frighten you, especially if you betrayed the great lord of the dark? He goes on to say that he would be scared. I'm not going to say what he says. I do think that Asmodian was killed by Balefire. The way he dies feels more like he disappears. Besides clean and neat, leaving Rand a balance of wondering if he's a threat. Also very strategic, if Rand may blame Asmodian for a few things. Lots of people say the timing is wrong, that nobody knew that Rand was in Camelin, but Ravine's death would kind of tell the Dark One where Rand is. What the Dark One knows, probably Morden knows right after, or Nablis. Plenty of time to give the order. All this opens up a neat door for Taim to walk right into place through the front entrance and do what he has to do. Other reasons he believes it to be true. One, it is shown that Morden is involved in more than just controlling other Forsaken. Two, it really seems like Morden is playing stones, moving one here, that one there. Three, it's been said that there will be new Dreadlords, and the first Dreadlords were Ishmaels. They have come into the story somehow, not just because they're in the last book. They have to come into the story, not just because they're in the last book. Robert Jordan said that it's obvious, but he also says that a few people guessed correctly who kills Asmodian, so it must be something a little bit more. He goes on to say he'd really like to know what we think about his theory. Is it crazy enough? Ben's not here, so I figured we'd do this now. Thanks for reading. Best wishes and happy end. Surrogate Kit.
One thing with the email and with Taim being involved with Asmodian's death, and we're going to talk about this a little bit when we go over Taim in the next part of the podcast, but the point that he brings up is that Robert Jordan said it's obvious. The only thing that could not be obvious about Taim having anything to do with it is at this point in the books, when Asmodian is killed, Taim is not, number one, he's not known to be a dark friend. Number two, he's not a big part of the book, so it wouldn't be obvious at that point in the book series that Taim was the killer.
We didn't,
or that he had anything to do with it.
It was only hearsay what we heard about him anyway. We weren't introduced to him at that point,
right?
Except for hearing his name, hearing about him. So that there's some really good points there, and I guess it could be, but I'm not sure if it would be something that would be obvious. It wouldn't be obvious to me at that point in time when there were no other books after it that it would be him. I would never think of Taim at all. So it's kind of crazy, but it's not that crazy. So I guess it could be plausible.
Yeah, and I definitely think it makes a good deal of argument in there. One thing that he didn't mention, and I'm not certain where we first hear about it, but Taim also deals with the colors red and black, which tend to be Moradin's / Ishmael's color scheme that he really likes. I don't know, might be a bit of evidence in favor of this particular theory. I can't say one way or another. I personally have my own little personal thoughts here and there, but I've never been really conclusive over who really did it and who didn't. So,
well, I think the part where he's saying that Taim is working for Moradin could definitely be true, because we've discussed that in the past. Mm-hmm. So that part is definitely right on. I'm just not sure about the reason for Taim sending someone.
Whether
I could see if they were to recognize him and he was about to go to Rand, so he wouldn't want Asmodian to recognize him. But besides that, what motive would he have, to... Most of the Forsaken are pretty close-mouthed with each other. They don't tell each other their plans or introduce them to people that are doing things for them, because they don't... Who knows when they might want that person to spy on one of the other Forsaken. So I'm not sure that anybody else would know who Taim was.
Yeah, I guess it would have to be really, really, really precisely timed in order for it to really work.
Okay, I think... with that, we're going to speak a little bit, and I say a little bit as a pun. We're going to talk about the death of Asmodian. This is what a lot of people have been waiting for, and a lot of other people have been cringing, but we're going to trudge on regardless. First off, the link to some great information, and I'm not going to take credit at all for what we're going to talk about too much. I got most of the information from this link, and I'm going to take the time to read it because it's great. Anyone that's interested in Asmodian's death, it's http://www.steelypips.org, steelypips.org/WOTFAQ/1_dark_1.1_forsaken1/1.1.6_asmo.html. Our discussions could go on for an hour, could go on for hours. It has gone on for years. It's been discussed to death, and pardon the pun. It's been discussed at conventions where the going theory is that he was killed by an allergic reaction to some apple brandy. Also discussed on message boards, emails, mailing lists, etc., etc. I want to break it down really quick. This is basically what happened. Asmodian was playing the harp. He went to go find some booze, basically. As he walked in the door, he saw someone. He said, "You." This is not an exact quote, of course. And then he was gone. And it said his dying words were... what was the quote? His dying words were... It hung in the air when death took him. So that's where we stand, and that's what the big mystery is, because no one actually knows who did it.
Yes, but we're told that it should be obvious by Robert Jordan.
Yeah.
Which is...
We've been given a few clues, so we'll go over those clues too soon.
Yeah, it's fairly widely assumed that the culprit is one of the Forsaken. He was either bale-fired or killed so quickly, as Jason said, the words hung in the air when death took him. Killing without the power really isn't plausible because there's never a mention of a body at all. Considering the circumstances, the discarding of a body in the royal palace in Camelin, just a bit problematic, honestly. With all the people that there are in the palace, the body would either have had to have been completely eradicated in the storeroom, or it would have had to have been drawn through a gateway or some sort of entrance into Teleron Rihad. Another thing that points to the murder being accomplished with the One Power is that Asmodian really wasn't completely defenseless to physical attacks. Though he was shielded against the True Source and his true strength by Lanfear, the shield wasn't complete, and he was still capable of channeling. It may have only been a trickle compared to what Rand or what Asmodian would normally be capable of, but it would have been enough for him to defend himself from anything but, like, the most, unexpected sneak attack physically. So really, according to that logic, the most likely murderer is somebody who can channel strongly enough to overwhelm the little power that Asmodian has access to. Also, the murderer has to be someone that Asmodian recognizes. In the series, he isn't really seen to interact with a huge amount of inhabitants from the Third Age. Pretty much, if it's not Rand after his captivity, the only times we really see him speaking with anyone is with the other Forsaken. Therefore, they're the most likely candidates for a murderer, because Asmodian's going to recognize them, and they can kill him really quickly in a way that won't leave a body. To sum it up a little better, we've constructed a list of possible suspects who are either ineligible or unlikely to be Asmodian's murderer, along with available evidence to support the suppositions. Jason?
First on our list is Demandred. He does not know that Asmodian is dead, and I will have a link to the exact passage where it says that if Demandred doesn't know he's dead, he is not the killer. A Mogedian, at this time, she's Nynaeve's prisoner, so therefore she has no possible way that she could be the killer. Semirag, she also doesn't know that Asmodian is dead. Erengar and Osengar, we believe at this point that they are both still dead. They have not been resurrected at this point in the series. Misana, she expresses doubt over whether he's really dead or not. Also, before his death, we never hear much about her specifically. So, therefore, when RJ said it's obvious, she's not going to be the candidate for us.
Also, there's Shadar Haran. Asmodian wouldn't recognize the Super Fade. Also, he was not introduced before Lord of Chaos came out, so he's not obvious either. Samael. Samael has mentioned that he thinks that Rand killed Asmodian and is confused about why, so that makes Samael unlikely as the murderer, or pretty much cuts him right out. There's Peyton Fain. He would have no means to kill Asmodian quickly as it happened. There's no logical connection between Fain or between Fain and Asmodian that would account for Asmodian recognizing him before the killing blow. Asmodian would have been able to put up at least a bit of a struggle against a physical attacker because the dagger doesn't work immediately, so it's a very slim possibility that it would be him. There's also a gray man, which, like Fain, there's no quick way for a gray man to kill him where he couldn't defend himself with the power. Nor would Asmodian recognize one just by looking at it. And I would think that at first his eyes would even slip past him, like they always mention when you see a gray man. So he wouldn't just look at him and be like, what are you doing here? And there is Golem. While Asmodian couldn't defend himself against Golem with power, one, would Asmodian have recognized the Golem to cry out in recognition? And then two, where is the body? And most importantly, three, by his death, we hadn't been introduced to the Golem yet in the series. So that's a no, because we didn't even know who Golem was, so it could not be obvious.
And of course, there's the ever popular Moraine did it theory. Moraine could not have done it. She is imprisoned. At this point, she's just within the past 2 hours fallen into the Tarangriel and is in the presence of the Eelfin. There are theories that say she broke out and then went back. That's just really far-fetched. Honestly, Moraine is not in a position that she could ever have done it. There's Tame. Again, Robert Jordan has said the person is obvious, and as we kind of discussed earlier, he's not really all that obvious as an actual killer himself. We haven't even known for sure until the last, pages within the last couple books that he was even really a Dark Friend. And we're not even 100% sure of that even now, even though it's pretty obvious by the end of Knife of Dreams. So Tame really isn't all that plausible, which, of course, leaves who could be the killer.
The first suspect who could be the killer is Shamael slash Morden. He had the means, he had the opportunity, and he possibly could have a motive. However, the motive, I don't believe, and a lot of people don't believe, that the motive is strong enough to encompass him. And this is what he would have done, basically. He would have had to go there, disguise himself so that Asmodian would recognize him at first, and then kill him, then leave without doing anything else. So that's really unlikely of a major character in a book to specifically go there to kill Asmodian. It seemed like an accident. That wasn't the real reason why the killer was at the palace. So Shamael Morden, very unlikely. He's too important of a character to care, really, what was happening with Asmodian.
Then we have Lanfear. There is strong evidence that Lanfear did it. I know there have been many posts and theories about her. There's lots of theories in the fandom. But if she did, she would have to have had escaped from the Finns. And there are references that she was held by them. She went through and was held and transformed into Sindane sometime later. It seemed that she was indisposed at the time. And if she wasn't, then the explanation on how she escaped went back and then transformed into Sindane, much weaker in the power, would be far-fetched. Again, it's plausible, but unlikely.
This brings us to a really interesting possibility, which is Slayer. Slayer fits the requirements. He's got the means to do it, being able to jump in and out of Teleron Rehad seemingly at will. He's got the opportunity. He could have a motive. Slayer is an assassin, kind of like a super gray man, as a lot of people have commented to us, and could have been ordered to do it. But Slayer's got a little bit of a problem in that, you know, killing Asmodian and then cleaning up really nice and tidy and leaving absolutely no evidence really doesn't fit in his style. He could have been ordered to leave or to hide all of his evidence, but once again, there's really nothing to connect Asmodian and Slayer in a way that Asmodian would recognize Slayer by seeing him. Also, Slayer's attack would have to be physical. We've never seen that he has any supernatural, you know, mojo power at all, other than his ability to hop in and out of the world of dreams. So while he was capable of killing Asmodian, it would have to be really quickly and probably from behind. A face-to-face confrontation really isn't going to work, because, as I've mentioned before, Asmodian would be able to defend himself. From the way the death is described, Asmodian just died.
That leads us to the very last person that we're going to speak of. And for myself, this is the person that I believe actually did it. Here's my support for that. Grendahl. She knows he's dead. She's one of the only characters. She's only the Forsaken. She's the only Forsaken that we actually know that she knows Asmodian is dead. However, she also thinks Lanfear is dead, and we all know that Lanfear is not dead. So that by itself isn't proof enough that she did it. Her exact location at the time of Asmodian's death, it cannot be determined. It's assumed that she is there helping Ravine in some kind of a way with Rand. Her motive, though, is weak, except for the fact that killing Asmodian would get her favor with the Dark One, but there's the possibility and the most likely scenario that there wasn't a motive. Remember, Asmodian was killed in the back room of a palace as he was going to look for wine. That's hardly a place that he was expected to be, hardly a place that Grendahl expected to be found. Asmodian recognized his attacker, and she fits the bill. Imagine this. Grendahl is hiding in the palace for whatever reason. She's helping Ravine fight Rand. There's evidence that she is helping Ravine fight Rand. She would know that Rand was there. She would know that Ravine was there. Asmodian goes to, like I said, goes to look for some wine. He finds Grendahl hiding in the palace, and she kills him because she doesn't want Asmodian to rat her out to Rand in company that she's there. From all the arguments against or for any of the killers, like I said, Grendahl, she is the most plausible person, in my own personal opinion. There's nothing that directly clues us that she's not the one that kills him. There's no hard evidence that she is not the person that does it. It's very interesting to me, and that's why I believe she's the killer. What do you guys think?
Yeah, she's my guess too. Only even before I really did any thinking about it when I first read it, it was kind of more of a gut reaction, and I'm not sure why. And then when we're listing every single person that could have motive for killing him, it's like they just traveled to the closet just to kill him. How do they know that he's in there? That's the one thing that I want to say every time we talk about somebody. How in the world would they know that he just felt like going to get some wine? You know, that makes no sense. So it makes perfect sense that it was somebody was hiding there for some particular reason, and Grendahl seems to make the most sense logically to me.
Yeah, I mean, I am pretty much in agreement. The other thing with Grendahl, and I don't remember exactly which book it's in, if any of our listeners know the evidence and want to, you know, pop it by on our podcast forum page, I'd be really grateful because it's just not getting to me right now. But sometime later, after, I don't know if it was Raven's death or one of the others, Grendahl's talking about or thinking about how she's going and cleaning up afterwards, trying to, you know, make sure that none of her connections to that person are figured out. So it's quite possible that she's in the palace because she's trying to make sure no one connects her to Raven at all. And in doing so, she just happens to duck into that closet to kind of escape being noticed by, you know, someone else and being in the closet, or maybe it's the place that she just decided that's where she was going to gateway in. Osmodian comes in and suddenly it's like, wait a minute, what are you doing here? And oops, dead. really, she does seem to fit best. I put Moradin / Ishmael at a close second, because I think he could technically do it. The thing that really does point out is that in order for Osmodian to have recognized Moradin, Moradin would have had to have disguised himself as Ishmael, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, why would he do that? There was even, I think at one point, someone put in that maybe Avienda had figured out who Osmodian was and followed him to the closet and killed him. And that seems just a little too, oh, look, he's finally leaving Matt and me as we're sitting here. I might as well go kill him now so that it'll be a complete shock. I just don't see Avienda working in that particular place, and I just realized just now that we had left her off the list, so I really don't think she's possible of it. Grandel really just overall seems the most plausible person to have committed the murder.
Yeah, and the reason why we left Avienda off the list is specifically because Osmodian leaves Avienda to go to find the wine, and she would have to literally go through the palace, through another door, and surprise Osmodian, and then commit the murder. And then without, obviously without being able to bail fire, because I don't believe at this point she knows it, then she'd have to, because she couldn't kill with the bail fire, she would have to hide the body. So it's just so not plausible. So we just left her off the list. But just to further my point on Grendel, Osmodian's murder is in the second degree, and I'll explain that. Murder in the first degree is planned. This is not something that's planned. He was not supposed to be there. Nobody knew that he was going to have the urge to get drunk at that time. It was an accident. The person stumbled upon him, and they were trying to cover themselves because they didn't want Osmodian to know he was there. Who else in the book series would recognize Osmodian? Osmodian would recognize them, and that person would feel the need to kill Osmodian to keep the secret that that person wasn't there.
Yeah. And another thing is that one thing that I always picked up on is, it could just be the way I'm taking it, but I never saw him, from reading the words, that he was scared. He was more curious, like, what are you doing here? Not thinking, oh my God, there's that guy's gonna kill me, I'm toast, you know. It was at the beginning, he just thought he was more curious in a way, and it seems to me that Grendel would be the perfect person, that he would kind of have that. Everybody else, he'd probably be a little bit more surprised, and with her, he would probably just be, hey, what are you doing here, you know. And it could be something little, maybe I take it the wrong way, but that's something that always pops out to me.
No, I agree. If he walked in the room and he saw Ishmael, Moradin disguised as Ishmael, which was the way that it would have had to be, he's not going to say, you know, or even you. He's going to probably grab his pants, first of all, because he knows the power that Ishmael has. He doesn't know exactly what's going on with Ishmael. He knows that he was the most powerful. He's not going to say, you know, he's probably going to turn his back and run, which is exactly what I would do. There's someone that he wasn't necessarily scared of at the exact moment that he saw them.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the biggest thing it comes down to, the fact that the death has to be really quick, is the fact that Osmodian does not get an hour-long oration as he dies. He's not Hamlet. You know, He walks into the thing, he says, you know, because he realizes suddenly what's going on, and boom, dead. It's really feasible, you know, just that he's been killed. You can see the words drifting in the air. It's not like, you know, someone's remembering him saying, you know, a half an hour, you know, paragraph on, oh, why did I ever turn back to the light, or, you know, why did I ever betray the great dark lord, or, you know. He just kind of walked in and was just like, you? No! And dead. So it just, you know, It's definitely just something that's really quick, and, you know, honestly, the best person that I can see, especially because it was Grandal and I believe Samiel who were working with Raven, and I think when Rand is chasing people around, he passes two servants, like two people who are just randomly in the palace, mm-hmm. and a lot of people say that those have to be, you know, Samiel and Grandal sitting there, you know, not wanting Rand to recognize them, but at the same time trying to help Raven out, and that they ducked into the closet or that pantry so that they could make their escape, and that they just hadn't by the time that, you know, Asmodian finally went to get a drink, and that, you know, he walked in and suddenly they're there, and it's like, oh, shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems really, you have to keep in mind that Robert Jordan did say that it should be obvious, so it can't be something so, you know, CSI is, oh, there was these two servants in a hallway. I mean, I don't think it's anything as blatant as that. Basically, what happened is this. He walked in the room. He discovered someone that he wasn't expecting. That person wasn't expecting to see him there, obviously. That person had to hide themselves being at that place at that time and killed him because they didn't want him to rat him out. To me, she's the only one that fits the bill. If it was a Shamael and he stumbled upon Asmodian, I think he'd probably maybe torture him a little bit. He would have no fear of being found out that he was there. He can just poof, and he just has the most power. And, you know, out of all the Forsaken, he's the one with the most power. Grendel, she would be the person that would need to hide the fact that she's there and she's helping Ravine, or that she was helping Ravine, as Mandry pointed out.
I really wish Ben was here, because, don't quote me, I could be completely wrong, but I think he has somebody else in mind of who he thinks killed Asmodian, and it would be neat just to have a different perspective on everything, because we seem to be agreeing pretty much, mm-hmm. and it would be nice just to hear his thoughts. At least last time we talked, I thought that he said that he thought it was somebody else, so maybe we'll get a quick answer out of him in the next one, see what he says. Just who he thought it was.
Yeah, on our podcast, I'll make a point to make sure that he lets us know exactly who it is that he thinks, or I'll make him post a post about it. So that's gonna wrap it up. I mean, as Carrie said, the panelists right now, we agree that it was Grendel that killed him. By no means at all does this mean she is definitely the person that did it. We have no inside information from Robert Jordan or anyone else that she's the person that did it. We may be missing facts. We may be missing other theories. Anyway.
Thank you to everybody who's listening. I'd like to apologize. I've been coughing and clearing my throat throughout this whole podcast. So if the editing doesn't catch all of it, I'm so sorry if I broke your eardrums or I tried to cover my mic, but just sorry if any of it got through. I do feel reasonably confident that if all that gets edited out, that everybody enjoyed the show. If we missed somebody that you just know did it and you know that it's them, then please visit our forums at www.dragonmount.com/forums and click on the Fourth Age. We have a couple of posts on the subject, and we'll be checking in periodically to give our opinions. As always, we also accept email theories and feedback at podcast@dragonmount.com. You can send us a voicemail attached as well.
In the next few weeks, our podcast is going to take a different format, but it's a surprise to everyone, so you'll see it when that comes up. I'm also looking into the possibility of doing a live webcast of our podcast. I've been searching of a way to do this, to make this happen. I've been coming up blank. Everything that I can do, if any of our listeners know a way that we can do this or think that they'd find it interesting, drop me a line. It's Jason with a Y, Jayson at dragonmount.com. Send me your information. If you could think of a way that we can do a live webcast of our podcast, or even if maybe some people want to get together with us after we record one, I'm open to any possibilities, so send me an email.
And as always, if you wish to leave us a voicemail with feedback, theories, or just whatever you like, we have two different ways to accommodate you. The first of those is with phone access within the United States. You can give us a call and leave us a message at 1-888-333-7690. Secondly, so long as you have a mic, you can leave us an audio message on our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/fourthage.
Oh, I was just going to say one thing, just to squeeze it in. We've got a few emails from people just letting us know that we have more than one listener in Australia, so I just thought that I'd acknowledge that that we received those emails, and we know that we have quite a few fans over there. So
yeah, I don't want to sound like a broken record acknowledging everyone from every different country that listens to us, but it's still amazing to me that we have multiple people now that listen to us from Australia, from the Ukraine, from Russia, from France. I know we've got an email from someone that listens to us in England. It's funny, and we appreciate, you know, all the people that listen to our podcast. And if you're from a different country, we appreciate you even more, that you not only read the Wheel of Time, but that you take the time and listen to our podcast. And you like our podcast, whether you like it or hate it, we're here. We do it. And yeah, if just email us if you're listening from a country I haven't mentioned. I'd like to get a big map, you know, and put some thumbtacks in there to see what kind of world reach we have. Everybody have a great few weeks. Again, you're going to be hearing some new stuff from us, and we hope to start the new year off wonderfully.
Good night, and take care.
Blessed be you all in the light, and for Ben, who isn't here again this week, walk in the light.
The Fourth Age podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.